At least we're not Sonic fans.
They're going to have a better movie than we are, though. I mean, think about that.
Dude, I don't know, man. I still haven't seen it. I have, like, no interest in seeing that shit.
I saw it with my kids.
Like, yeah, exactly. Like, kid movie level, you know, like, good job, they did it, but...
We're going to get, like, you know, we're getting something by the dude who made Kong Skull Island.
I like Kong Skull Island, man. Like, I kept thinking about Metal Gear when I was watching it, so I like,
yeah, cause
was
he, getting hype. Because he was, put like, references like, all in it, but can you, like...
Yeah, I know. Like, when there was that one, like, ninja dinosaur, I don't remember, but, you know, there's, like... That's what I'm saying. It didn't stick with me that good, but I do remember like the visuals going on. I was like, yo, imagine this being Gray Fox. This will be dope. Yeah, like, I don't know.
We're going
I felt
full.
Like he had a good sense of action at least.
Yeah, but that's what I'm worried about because we're going full Twin Snakes.
I don't think he'll go full, but I think it will be some of that level. Being, like, you know, there will be a couple of those like dope slow-mo moments, but I don't know.
I'm willing to accept Diet Twin Snakes if it pulls an audience to get, you know, hit box office numbers. But I think I'm speaking way too ahead of you here.
I've seen some tweets that scare me because one of the tweets I saw was, hey, like, what would be the film equivalent of a Hieronymus Bosch painting? And I'm just like, oh no. Like, is that where we're going?
I don't want that. Wait, is that what the guy is saying that he's gonna do for Metal Gear?
Yep. No, but it just seemed like fishing for what to do with it.
What's his name? Jordan Vogt Roberts, right?
Yeah, and he seems like a really cool guy.
Yeah, I don't trust a guy with a beard that long. Like, Fingers, you do it well, right? Beard in moderation. Yeah, beard responsibly.
Exactly. You got to bring it in every once in a while. Like, his is probably touching his belly button by now, and that's a little weird.
I haven't seen the other movie he did. I saw Kong Skull Island, but... What was
nobody saw that. Nobody saw the other movie that he did. It's like of summer.
Yeah, something
like Girls of Summer.
Something
or some
of Summer.
Shit like
yeah, I want to watch that. I want to be.
You
fair.
Know, Kojima probably watched it.
He definitely did.
Kojima was like saw Girls of Summer, and then that was it.
A picture of like the poster on Twitter, and then.
Yep, that's it. You know how he rolls. You know
that's
means.
That's what I did after I beat Death Stranding. I just put beat Death Stranding and put the poster up.
When I first beat it, I was feeling some kind of way, but then it was like afterwards, I let it sink in. I was like, wait a minute. But I think the more we talk about it, the more, you know, the better of an understanding we're kind of pulling out of it. Because we, you know, just reading through that wiki together the other night, we were like, okay.
It feels like a passion project, you know? It, like, this is emotional venting for him, and I respect it on that level.
Yeah. I thought we weren't going to start with Death Stranding.
I think we should go back to the movie really quick before we move on to Death Stranding, because that was the focus, you know, of what we're going to be talking about.
The Metal Gear Solid movie. Yeah, let's talk about the movie.
and how we think it should be handled. Like, you know, I do think going across a majority of the timeline, like doing a bunch of the different sections would be a way to do it instead of focusing on like one game.
My answer is pretty easy. Step one, don't do it.
I'm kind of with you there.
I don't think that Metal Gear is filmable.
But just to say, if it, you know, it's happening.
So, gun to my head, how am I going to make the Metal Gear movie?
Is
essentially what you're asking, Fingers.
Yeah.
It's a good way of looking at it. All right, gun to your head. How do you, what,
I mean,
what would you
if you
want to
take the bullet, that's fine too.
I'll take the bullet. Nah. I don't know. I kind of pictured it as sort of like a mystery box adventure where, you know, it begins by framing all of these sort of mysteries and questions, and then, you know, having either using that as a sequel pull or I don't know, I see some sort of like mystery box JJ Abrams crap going on with it, just because, you know, that's the one thing I remember from going through Metal Gear is the sheer like mystery of every, like, that's the only reason I play through things, and I'm kind of rambling on at this point, but that's what happens when you pose an impossible question to me, like, what would you do with a Metal Gear movie?
I'm really worried it's going to end up kind of like the Ghost in the Shell movie, where it's an amalgamation of everything from the franchise into some sort of a warped version of all of it at once.
Right.
You know, because the movie was like part of the original, part of the sequel, part of standalone complex, part of, I think even Arise was in there a bit. And it was just all of these things kind of meshed together into, you know, this regurgitated Ghost in the Shell product. And I'm worried like that's what Metal Gear is going to be as a movie. It's not going to be just like, oh, we're starting with Metal Gear 1, or oh, we're starting with Metal Gear Solid. It's we're gonna grab elements from here and here and here and kind of make our own thing. But when you do that, those elements lose their purpose.
Okay,
sure.
So that's my worry.
I really like with a passion. I really didn't like the concept art that he had put together that mashed the different eras of Metal Gear, like the shot I'm looking at it now of Gray Fox fighting the Gecko from MGS4. That didn't vibe with me, because for multiple reasons. You know, Yoji Shinkawa, I feel like as the art director of each game, every design, it's, you know, the reason why he designs it a certain way is because it's meant to fit the theme of that particular game. There's not a lot of room for cross-pollination when it comes to like taking a concept from 4, like the Gecko, and juxtaposing it next to Gray Fox.
I think he did that for no other reason, this for his like personal enjoyment,
right?
Because he did say, he was like, this is an official movie for the art, or official art for the movie. This is basically just like, you know, I was hiring my art buddies and just like would be like, hey, check this out, you know, like this would be cool,
right? It would be
and,
cool.
I think it'll serve its purpose as like, you know, some other thing later on. But yeah, I don't think he's going to be cross-pollinating timelines like that.
I hope not, but we don't know at this point.
Yeah, true.
At the same time, though, he's got the guy who wrote, like, what, the Jurassic World movies and...
Yeah, that's not a good move for me.
Well, I'm glad we can all agree Jurassic World wasn't that great. Going off of Nitroid's point, though, one thing I am worried about, and this is coming from also being a Silent Hill fan, is them taking that symbolism, whether it is, you know, an amalgamation from multiple games or even just, you know, symbolism from a single game, and misrepresenting it just to kind of get those Metal Gear trademarks in. So like with the Silent Hill movie, like Pyramid Head had nothing to do with the story of Cheryl, but they arbitrarily put him in because that's what Silent Hill's about, right? Pyramid Head.
Right.
Now that being said, I can't think of any symbols off the top of my head that would be as pronounced as Pyramid Head for Metal Gear.
Metal Gear Rex.
Well, like Rex and Gray Fox are the big two.
Yeah.
Yeah, the closest things I can think of are like Rex and Gray Fox.
Hallways, bloody hallways. Yeah.
The one interesting shot out of that art that caught my eye was, I mean, I don't know what you could ever do with it, but it was this psychedelic shot of Snake standing in front of like this Hydra sort of thing, like his bandana's flowing over and it becomes this snake with other snakes coming out of its mouth. And
right.
They kind of did that in the novelization of the first one, or, you know, Metal Gear Solid, when Psycho Mantis was like, he took Snake to like a goddamn carnival, like in his head.
Oh, yeah.
Kittyland.
Freaky or whatever, shit. Yeah. But I feel like they could definitely do something like that, where Psycho Mantis is like, you know, projecting or doing something, like, you know, mentally making those things appear in Snake's head.
I'd always hoped they would use David Hayter's treatment. I mean, there's no telling if it was good or not without actually reading it, but the way he pitched it was that, how do you put it? He said it was the apocalypse now of the digital age. That was the story he wanted to tell with his screenplay. And I like, that's curious sounding, at least, you know?
Yeah, but I don't equate, I mean, I don't see any influence from like Heart of Darkness or Apocalypse Now in Metal Gear Solid. Like, the themes are just radically different. I don't know. That's not Metal Gear to me.
Metal Gear, particularly Metal Gear Solid 1 through 3, try to have a positive, optimistic message to try to fit the narrative, or at least the tone of Heart of Darkness or Apocalypse Now into that, would, I feel like, would be like, you know, putting a square into a circle. Additionally, it's as much as I love I'm a sucker for stuff based around Heart of Darkness. I mean, I've played through Spec Ops like 8 times.
Okay.
But that being said, bringing up Spec Ops, it's not necessarily an indication of quality. Just again, going by David Hayter's old work. So while the concept sounds promising, I don't know if I can trust. Just because he's Snake, I don't know if I could trust him with the material.
I like him as
Snake. I think
you're
right about the tone, though, because like the 4 through 4, 4.5, if you want to call Peace Walker that, and 5, those are much more cynical in tone.
Okay.
And but the first 3 sort of cemented that original tone of Metal Gear, and it's what we all kind of think of when we imagine it. You know, that seems to be what I get out of it.
What you say? You say 4 was more cynical?
4 was absolutely cynical.
What was cynical about 4? I never got that interpretation.
4 ultimately was about... I'm going to try not to go on an enormous rant about Metal Gear Solid 4 here, because this game is my kryptonite, but... 4...
I think you did last week, so...
Yeah.
He does it every week.
Why can't I quit you, Metal Gear?
We need a jar.
Seriously. But MGS4, I mean, from the get-go, was put out there as a game that was unnecessary and that Kojima did not want to make. And if you look at the message of the game in kind of a totality, and you don't just go by like the last, you know, optimistic, 15 minutes of the game, it's very much about sort of this attitude of being tired of it all and of getting away and of putting these things to rest. It's kind of a game about getting away from Metal Gear. I mean, I know this is overused, but if Metal Gear Solid 2 is kind of a deconstruction of video games, then Metal Gear Solid 4 is kind of a deconstruction of Metal Gear. In a way.
Right. Okay. I saw Steak Bentley's review too. That was, can we get him on the show?
Yeah, seriously. I want to get him on. He would be awesome to talk to about this.
And I hear everything you're saying, and all of that is absolutely true. But then at the end, you know, what's the lesson Snake learns? Oh, don't shoot yourself in the face. Actually, you know, live the rest of your days as peacefully as you can. Which seems pretty optimistic to me.
I mean, I don't know. The whole thing kind of gets mired in self-indulgence. So it's hard for me to get an optimistic message out of it.
Well, this is Kojima we're talking about, so...
It also, I was going to say, in terms of scope, it felt very contained as sort of a finale for Metal Gear. You know, Snake is kind of just, he's sort of just dueling out as compared to the true, what was intended to be the true farewell for Kojima, which was Metal Gear Solid 2, which felt like an invigorating, you know, just take what you've got and make your own path compared to, okay, well, you know, Snake's going to go into a cabin and die now.
Right. He did do that. Yeah. That's what I would have loved to see. Like, okay, what happens after Snake?
Rising.
You know?
He gets turned into a sword spirit.
Right, yeah. But it didn't seem like his death was like it mattered to that world. You know what I mean? Because is he even dead in Rising?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. They allude to it. Gave Otacon the confidence to be a ladies' man, so...
Wait, what?
Which is amazing to think about.
There is a codec call in Metal Gear Rising. So Emma Emmerich is actually one of the support characters in the game for Raiden. And Raiden asked
Sunny?
Him... Oh, I'm sorry. Sunny. Why did I say Emma? Sorry.
Oh, I was going to say... Hold on a second. Wait, she survived? She survived dying? That's what I'm saying. Like, Snake could be alive, right?
There's a call with Sunny Golukovich, and
right.
Raiden just asks, you know, how she's doing and how Otacon's doing, and Otacon is apparently a ladies' man post Metal Gear Solid 4.
Well, to be fair, Otacon always has been. I feel like.
Yeah, I feel like that kind of proves he was just like untapped potential, maybe, because he always had some sort of. It wasn't always the most healthy relationships, but relationships nonetheless.
Right.
Otacon fucks.
This guy fucks.
Yeah. No, in fact, like, we have hardcore proof.
He goes way back, yeah.
Right. His stepmom, one.
Yeah.
Sniper Wolf, I mean, not unconfirmed, but, you know, the potential's there.
See, what's...
She probably at least touched it, but...
What's, Sniper Wolf for me feels like an exception, though. Sniper Wolf feels like a little bit of a distance for him. Like, he saw her and he was like, oh, she likes dogs. I like dogs. It was meant to be.
We can make this work.
Yeah. Yeah. Naomi, that was kind of a weird situation. That was kind of her manipulation shit.
But yeah. But still, you know, I mean,
got it.
They in the helicopter. What's up with, you know, the accent switching between 1 and 4? I know the reasoning behind it, but I mean, how do you guys feel about how what that did to the world?
If I'm being honest, I feel like Naomi became insufferable from Twin Snakes onward.
Okay. Yeah.
And I don't necessarily. I'm not saying that was in that was due to the accent change. I don't know. There was a tonal shift to the character that came in
right
during Twin Snakes, where it just sounded like the actress was just not interested in doing that at all. And you can kind of understand that since they're just rehashing dialogue that they'd already done.
Right.
But
and then you've got Mei Ling.
Right. And like when MGS1 was recorded, it wasn't just Chris Zimmerman doing the voice directing, it was also Jeremy Blaustein. And so I wonder if in part it came out of that dynamic, and then once Blaustein was gone, they were like, okay, well, let's not have that anymore.
Okay.
But
Jeremy Blaustein, was that the guy who did the translation too?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. That guy. Oh man, we got to talk about him. We got to talk about the blouse.
I do not say this lightly. I genuinely believe that a major part of MGS1's success in the US is due to his work.
Like, hands down, like not even up for discussion. That is a fact.
Yeah. I put my money on that. Yeah.
Yeah, and the fact that 2 didn't have his influence, like, it, you know, the series suffered.
You can tell instantly because the style of the dialogue is far less natural sounding. And there's almost like an attempt to sort of emulate it. But there's almost like a disregard for the dialogue.
It's very abstract.
Yeah.
It's like.
And yeah, I think you might be able to. I mean, I'm going to get into some muddy water here, and I'm not going to try and say too much. Because this is kind of an area of controversy, but the translator for Metal Gear Solid 2 had a very public disdain for the game and for Kojima. And I that wonder was, if some of that what's came her name? Through.
What was her name?
Agnes Kaku.
Yeah, Agnes Kaku, that's right. She, you know, that article just kept getting shoved down my throat, you know. Have you read this article? Have you read this article? Like, yes, like, I've read it. Jeez.
What I hated about that article, and it is a very good article, it's an insightful article, but what I hated was the way it was spread around as though, oh, hey, did you read this article? It proves that Kojima's not a good writer. Because one angry translator said so? Okay, no.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, we still, to this date, we can't get a concrete hold on what her credentials are, what writing she's done in the past. You know,
I mean, she's done
a lot.
She worked for Konami for quite a while and used to have a pretty large catalog of her work on her website. So, I mean, she's a seasoned professional translator.
What other titles did she do?
A lot of Konami stuff. I know she did Ghost Babel and Hybrid Heaven and, oh God, it's been a while, but she had a list of all the work she did on the site. It's been a long time. I'll try and dig it up.
Apparently she did some work on Final Fantasy 14, Beautiful Katamari. Yeah, this is the same, but 2 S's, Agnes.
No, it's not, let me be clear, I don't doubt her ability as a professional translator, but when Jeremy Blaustein worked on Metal Gear Solid, he had a love for the material that really came through, and he's talked about, you know, reading military novels and trying to get the tone down right and spending a lot of time to come up with creative, authentic sounding jargon to just make everything work. And he went to so much work to kind of nail that tone that it actually got him in trouble.
In trouble.
Too much of the source material.
Right. Weapons and equipment, OSP.
And they still use that to this day. The codec. They don't say codec in the actual... In the Japanese script, it's just like transceiver or radio.
And now you can see the little codec logo in Death Stranding. I wonder how the blouse feels about that.
Right?
Right.
Like his work has carried on so far, and I don't feel like he gets enough credit for that.
Konami dropped the ball not keeping him happy. That was a massive mistake. But I mean, the series became successful even without him, which is, it's neither here nor there.
This sounds weird, but I feel like the closest any of the sequels have come to that tone of MGS1 was Peace Walker.
Okay.
And the tapes that you can listen to are almost like a little radio dramas.
Hmm. Okay.
And I don't know what it was, but something about those felt more like MGS1 than anything before or after, at least to me.
Yeah, I do feel like that's where like the a lot of the cassette tapes like really just replaced like the good codec writing. Like that's where they really sat down and were like, how can we make this like an interesting thing to listen to? And like some of it was just science bullshit where they were just like talk about a bird for a long time, but you know.
I listened to every single cassette tape in Peace Walker and I could barely sit through one of them in Phantom Pain. They were awful.
Don't get me started.
Except the hamburgers, absolutely. Those were great. But so many of them were just these dry exposition dumps where it felt like the actors were reading off of a script and not actually bouncing off each other. And
yeah,
it just bored me to tears.
I want a burger now. Damn, I'm hungry. I mean, you have to ask, like, you know, how much of the script did Blaustein change? I'm sure it wasn't a lot, but, I mean, doesn't that technically alter the story to the point where it's not Kojima's work anymore?
From what I've heard of people who are fluent, it wasn't as dramatic a change as is sometimes said.
Okay.
And Twin Snakes, although not one for one with the original, if you compare Twin Snakes to the original MGS1, you can see a bit of the difference.
Hmm.
But it,
right.
There was interpersonal drama behind the scenes that seems to have led to the falling out more so than the actual changes did.
Hmm. Now I am fluent and but I haven't, you know, played the games in Japanese because I think they're just done better in English. And I feel like Kojima thinks so too, to an extent, because you know, MGS Integral, it had only English voice acting. Now a lot of people said that was because, you know, Kojima thought that the voice acting was better in English, but it turns out that might actually have been because there wasn't enough space on the disc to have dual audio. So take that for what you will. But
that's interesting.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, personally, I like Akio Otsuka, the guy who's been doing Snake from the beginning. Which, you know, it's just weird that David Hayter got replaced, but Otsuka didn't. And I mean, that's a different discussion, though.
I would be interested in hearing what you think of Metal Gear Solid 4 in Japanese, because I've heard the translation on that was,
it's weird, you know, because kind
of questionable.
Yeah, it is questionable.
4 was like, I've heard that 4 in Japanese, it has a far more poetic tone to it,
right? I've done a little bit of analysis on 4 in Japanese, but not the entire game. But it's It's like, yeah, it's really subtle, the things that it's because here's the problem with the Metal Gear Solid series as a whole. It's a Japanese native's interpretation of military crime fiction, a spy movie, and so the cultural nuances are like, he doesn't make any attempts to emulate American culture. It's like the characters are culturally Japanese, and you know, the motion capture actors, they're Japanese. They have these Japanese mannerisms that are weird when you try and localize it for a Western audience, but it's all the characters, like I said, they're culturally Japanese, and it's like, imagine, okay, what if Japan won World War II and then history continued as normal, but, you know, but it was like normal history, but suddenly Japan was running things behind the scenes. And that's how Metal Gear Solid has always felt to me, because it's like, it's so different from how things actually are in the United States.
That's kind of what gives it its charm.
Right. Too. And that's definitely a fair point. Metal Gear Solid has this charm because it's unique and it's not like the real world, but it's to the point that it can be jarring. You know, especially when, like, for example, let's say, I don't know, in MGS4, Naomi spends a lot of time bowing when she's talking to Sunny. And it's weird, and you don't really notice it unless you know what's going on, but you know.
Right, it's Japanese body language.
Yeah, like all of her body language is very strictly Japanese, and you know, and so that changes the cultural implications of the conversation. It has this nuance that you wouldn't notice as if you only spoke English. Whereas if you speak Japanese, you know, like that's a conscious decision that they're making because they're speaking to this character. So there's a lot of that, I think. And again,
I'm not fluent, but there's a bit of that in Metal Gear Solid 2 that I am aware of, and I'm not sure how much more there is. But one thing I had someone tell me once is that in the Japanese script, or maybe rather the performances, there's more of a flirtatious relationship between Raiden and Emma, which explains some of the mannerisms and dialogue, but that's completely lost in the US version.
Right, right. Yeah. And it's one of those things where it could be summed up entirely through body language and you just wouldn't notice it unless you knew that's what they were doing. Yeah. So,
or I know there's a line in Metal Gear Solid 4 that I heard that Tim Rogers wrote about that is a good example. I can't remember if this was in his review or it was somewhere else. I think it might have been in his review, but and this kind of goes back to the whole more poetic style of dialogue, but one of the lines in the game in Act 1, and it was featured in a trailer, is Naomi coming up to Snake and saying, "If you won't be a prisoner to fate, then go, fulfill your destiny," which to someone who speaks English sounds completely nonsensical.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
We're supposed to believe it's like, you know, deep or something, but in Japanese there was a different, it flowed differently. It was more like, if you don't want to be a prisoner to fate, then go and confront it.
Mm.
which
it's a lot more assertive.
Wow.
Yes, and that sort of attitude is apparently throughout the entire script but just got lost.
Wow. Well, I mean, what's done is done, so...
I think we need to hire Blaustein back again for the movie. Let him handle the screenplay. Or like, consult on the dialogue a little bit. Well, we'll have Kojima, too, as a consultant on the... You know, like, he's going to consult whatever's happening with
right.
It.
Yeah.
Like, somehow that when they, you know, figured out the license or whatever, like, Konami is, you know, not, like, big-boying him out of it. You know, like, he's still... consulting. So
here's what I know. Oh, no,
that's why I'm kind of like hopeful. At
Sony
least.
Owns the license. If they wanted Kojima to direct it, they could put him in charge, and Konami couldn't do a damn thing.
That's what I'm saying. So I think he is. You know,
he wouldn't do it,
or he already has like had that consultation or whatever. You know, like talk to him.
He wouldn't do it.
Not to derail the conversation, but now this made me think of a question. Okay, so scenario. Kojima gets a Stan Lee-esque, rest in peace, gets a Stan Lee-esque cameo in the Metal Gear movie.
Ooh.
What does he play?
Johnny Sasaki, obviously.
Yes, that's what I was thinking too.
That would be pretty great.
Right. There's no, unless they get the actual Johnny Sasaki to play him, that would be nuts, but no way.
That would be wild.
But no, because Johnny Sasaki would have too many lines, so it would have to be somebody in the background that...
If he did do Johnny, I think it'd have to be very subtle,
right.
Like very few speaking lines, if any. Like fans can tell it's him
running to the shitter, like
oh, you know, yeah,
just holding his butt.
Oh
like,
my god! That...
Just like, hey, that is his eyes. Wait a minute.
No, I gotcha. He would be a ghost that appears for a single frame, like Tyler Durden.
Oh yeah, that'd be pretty smart. Or you put him in his underwear and like in Twin Snakes, and you know, because you know they wouldn't do the blurred, pixelated, you know, ass. That would be funny, but
oh man, there you go. That's the kind of thing that this movie needs, is weird
fourth wall breaks.
That breaks the medium. Yeah, like putting a censorship blur over someone's ass. Like that's the kind of thing the movie needs.
Kojima's spread eagle, but censored, so it's okay. With the little stars going around too.
The whole fourth wall breaking aspect of Metal Gear works because it's an interactive medium, and so you have a different relationship with it. But when you turn it into a passive medium, you immediately lose that dimension. It doesn't quite work the same way. And the closest you can get to something like that in movies is nodding at the audience. And, you know, Fight Club, not to bring that up again, but they played with that to great effect. But
yeah, I'm a huge Fight Club fan.
I want Snake to look at the camera like The Office.
But if you were to do that, then you're playing around with the psychology of the movie. So the actual plot would have to revolve around the psychology of the main character. And I don't think
that. How do you do Psycho Mantis, for example? How do you do that in a movie?
Well, I don't think Solid Snake, if they were going to do a movie, I don't think Solid Snake should be the protagonist.
Maybe not.
Right. But
with Psycho Mantis, what do you say to the audience? Oh, if you want to see the second part of the movie, go to Theater 7.
Stick around after the credits for a cool scene.
Right. It just doesn't work. Smart. You know, it's...
You used Fandango.
That's genius.
I see you on your cell phone, douchebag.
Thank you for choosing Regal. And they would, like, send out different, you know, reels for each theater company.
If
you
only.
Have to take a pee-pee real bad, don't you?
Not great. Bye, everybody. I'm going to go watch Clue now. Thanks,
Fingers. Oh, man. Didn't they distribute the different versions of that movie to different theaters with different endings?
See, I would love... Really? I don't know how Metal Gear... Now I do. Okay, some theaters get the Metal Gear film where Romero lives, and then other... do you guys... Wow.
Vault Roberts, if you're listening, do this.
I don't know if you guys are fans of these guys or not, but do you watch the Outer Heaven Network on Twitch?
Sometimes, yeah.
I do not, personally.
Whenever they stream any... Even if it's like a supposed to be like an in-depth canon story run, I think they will do donation bets. Kill Meryl or... like save Meryl, and whatever wins determines her fate. It's so fucked up to me, but
kind of like what AGDQ does with Super Metroid.
Yeah, like don't save the animals.
That's clever.
Okay. Yeah. No, DC did that when they killed off a Robin.
Oh right, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
That was messed up.
I was waiting for somebody to be like, "Yeah, I know what you're talking about," and then if nobody did, I was going to explain it. But luckily, I don't have to. So
I love the idea of different prints going to different theaters with the different endings, though. That's great.
What do you think about doing the movie entirely in CG?
I don't like that.
Like 90% of Ready Player One. or that awesome movie Beowulf. You guys ever see that? I love that movie.
I mean, I think nowadays, like, you know, it's pretty much like how they did... I mean, some of the Star Wars stuff, and like, you know, they just like shoot it on this big ass sound stage that's just like all CG backgrounds. Like, you know, if that's what they're doing nowadays, it's like, you know, a lot of that looks pretty seamless.
Are you familiar with Project Ito?
Yes.
Yeah. Did you ever see Genocidal Organ, the anime adaptation of it?
I haven't seen it, but I have the book.
I've always felt like that style would lend itself to short stories in the Metal Gear universe. Not necessarily adapting the mainline stories, but like that universe is so broad that you could tell small, interesting little stories. Kind of like what Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex did with their, right. You know, with their non-main narrative episodes. Like, give it to those guys. Let them do.
I think that's a great idea.
Show. That would be interesting.
But don't do a movie. Do a Netflix series.
And I feel like if you bring it to a more short form medium, or I feel like if a more engaging medium like Netflix or some sort of like online service like YouTube, then you can maybe have a more engaging experience in terms of breaking the fourth wall.
And you can get into all the weird stuff. Yeah. Like if every single spin-off or short story told in this universe is a unique one-off, then you can get into those weird ideas that Vaught Roberts was showing off in the art, where nothing makes sense and you've got Gray Fox fighting the Gecko and so on. Like, you can do those short little things, because then you can play with the elements to tell these little self-contained stories rather than trying to reconcile this sprawling narrative into a medium that it was never meant for.
I would love to see like what the animators, since we're, you know, Sony owns all the rights, I would love to see what the animators from Into the Spider-Verse could do. I was imagining stylistically like a combination of Yoji Shinkawa and Ashley Wood. Now I'm getting kind of a nerd boner. Wow. But anyways,
did you ever see the Shinkawa model of Snake that they put into the document of Metal Gear Solid 2? Because they tried something like this once.
Right. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I need a refresher.
Well, early into development of Metal Gear Solid 2, they were thinking about doing something like a hybrid between Shinkawa's art style and 3D models. And so they tried to texture a 3D model of Snake with Shinkawa's art. So it's essentially his drawing superimposed on top of it. And I mean, people love this thing. It's kind of weird looking, but it's also really cool looking. So, I mean, they were toying with this idea very early on. And if you get the document in Metal Gear Solid 2, you can see it and mess with it a bit.
I've seen it, and I don't think it looks very good. I mean, it's cool, and I like that they experimented, and, you know, I'm sure one day the technology will be there.
Well, with Spider-Verse, you know, like she said, I think we're there, because, you know, fast forward 20 years, and now we've got that kind of technology where you might, you know, give it 20 years and see where you end up. Spider-Verse is insane looking. I mean, I don't even have the words to describe how that movie looks.
I think the traditional anime version, like, or, you know, route would be a lot smoother for Metal Gear, though. Like, I'm looking at the genocidal organ stuff that you're mentioning. Like, that style would be perfect for Metal Gear, I think.
Well, Kojima even said because he and Project Ito were friends. Ito was a you know, he's a manga artist and was a fan of Metal Gear and actually wrote fan mail to Kojima, and they started becoming pen pals and then built a friendship out of that.
Wow,
which is pretty cool. He sadly passed away from cancer several years back, but Peace Walker's actually dedicated to him.
Right.
But Kojima said of him once that he's the only person he's ever met who really understood what he was trying to do with these games.
And did he tell anybody what he was trying to do? I'm still trying to figure it out.
Right. but Ito was actually brought in to write the novelization of Metal Gear Solid 4, and I feel like he improved it in a lot of ways.
Yeah. That tone of that entire book is just like, holy shit. And it's from Otacon's, you know, perspective too.
So, and like, he strips out the Beauty and the Beast unit entirely from the story, and the whole thing flows way better.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, make it an anime.
Trying to get
I mean, if you look at Castlevania's success too, like the way that they're kind of approaching that, you know, like you could definitely hop in.
There's no way Konami isn't looking at that and going, we have other franchises.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that's definitely an avenue I think, you know, a team, you know, could sit down and write just separate stories, you know, one-off, whatever shit involving, you know, characters we already know in the Metal Gear universe or new ones, you know. That's,
I don't think that'll happen. So I think everyone seems to have, I don't know, the popular interpretation of Metal Gear seems somewhat antithetical to what it really is, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like there's very little misunderstanding what Castlevania is at a surface level.
Right.
You know, there's very little room to go further there, you know.
Right.
But with Metal Gear, on the surface it looks like one thing, but then as you get into it you realize it's something completely different.
Yeah.
It's not what it pretends to be on the surface, and a lot of that gets lost, I feel, in I don't know. It's like every time I see some sort of mass appeal type adaptation, it just seems like they don't quite understand the tone, for lack of a better way to put it.
So I was thinking of two examples when you bring that point up. The first one I can think of is Snake's Revenge, which I don't know that much about, but I feel like is a great example. And the second one, which I know we all agreed not to talk about this, but wasn't there some sort of like launch trailer for Death Stranding that was showing like Norman Reedus like having a gunfight with mules, and Kojima came out and publicly stated, this does not in any way represent Death Stranding. I did not have anything to do with this trailer. You know, please disregard it. I think those are two great examples of kind of what you're talking about.
I kind of missed that actually. I'm really curious about
that. Yeah, I didn't
see
that at all.
Let me see if I can find more information on that for you. Give me one second.
Well, that
but
is
I think
a,
you hit the nail on the head.
That's a perfect segue into Death Stranding, which is, speaking of movies, I mean.
Oh, boy.
I was actually looking for Kojima's like, tweet rant saying it wasn't his trailer.
Did he say they'd be ashamed of his words and deeds for making that trailer?
Right.
God, I wish.
That's easily his second best tweet.
Wait, what's his number one tweet?
His number one tweet is very easily,
I'm not a gay.
Wore a rainbow flag t-shirt today, but I'm not a gay.
My number one, and I don't know if it's just because I like brunch, is like the one where he's tweeting Eggs Benedict, and it's like, it looks like boobies.
Is that the farewell sausage tweet?
No, but...
What was that other thing that was huge on Tumblr for a while, days? The meat picture that he had? Like him in that big picture of meat?
Oh.
It was like a goddamn Castlevania turkey leg, like one of those type things. Runner-up for a good tweet for Kojima is after that earthquake or tsunami? He was like, I'm okay. Like,
what a boss. That
was pretty boss. Yeah.
Or the one of him like throwing up the horns shirtless at the beach.
Well, that is a perfect segue into Death Stranding.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, let's dive into this Death Stranding talk about
Speaking
that.
Speaking of movies.
So I found the trailer.
All right, you can post that in the chat.
And then let me see if I can find Kojima's tweet about it.
The drop promotional. Oh, okay. So this was around that time. Okay.
Yeah,
oh,
it's so.
Wait, he got mad at this? Because this was amazing looking.
This was, I don't want to necessarily say he was mad at it, but I remember it being distinctly passive aggressive about it. After this trailer dropped, he dropped a launch trailer that was about 7 minutes long. And then he made it very clear that he didn't edit or have anything to do with this promotional trailer, but this launch.
That might have, was that in response to the combat though, or was it in response to like the CG quality?
I would imagine it's both. I like I said, I like don't exactly remember the details.
I do remember people commenting like, there's no way they made this in-house.
Wait a second. I know why he was mad. It's just because he didn't do it. That's it.
Hey.
It's just that somebody else made a trailer and then he wanted people to know like, hey, I didn't make this, so you should hate it too.
I wish Kojima would make like Dragon Ball Z music videos for YouTube.
Why?
Because they would be the most intricate things imaginable.
I mean, how do you get more intricate than, you know, making a spirit bomb for 8 episodes? We waited so long.
Instead of Linkin Park, it would be Joy Division.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, I can't see.
Okay, this is just funny to me, and that's it.
I'm sorry, I didn't get the reference.
Okay, I'm really old.
We forgive you.
No, I'm just thinking about like all the facts that Goku would be saying to you as if he was reading a textbook while he's charging up his spirit bomb.
Oh, like
my Frieza. Spirit bomb is made out of these particles. Did you know that they are also used to energize this planet or some shit like that?
Frieza, do you believe love can bloom on a battlefield? Ha!
It would be the antithesis to Dragon Ball Z Abridged.
Like Dragon Ball Z taking itself way too damn seriously.
God, I would watch the hell out of that.
I know. That sounds amazing. But it's also in and of itself, it's a parody of itself, you know?
Well, you know, if Kojima does what he says he's going to do and starts directing movies, I mean, we're in for a trip.
But doesn't he already direct movies with gameplay distractions?
You know,
in between,
it's not
like
really.
To interrupt the movie?
Not really. And
no.
The reason I say that is because there's one example out there, or there's arguably one example of Kojima directing something that could qualify as a movie, and it's the Metal Gear Solid 3 Existence disc, if you're familiar with this. That's the only time he's done something that you could say is self-contained. And
did he really edit that?
Yes,
because I can't imagine that a human looked at that and was like, yeah, this is good.
And it's a fascinating nightmare of a thing to watch.
Right. Like, why are there continuity issues? Like, why are you doing flashbacks to 5 minutes ago?
It
just started 5 minutes ago.
And I mean, credit for stuffing that into 3 hours, but my God, you know, this is... You've made Lord of the Rings.
Oh, man.
You've made a very awkward Lord of the Rings.
I was about to say, don't insult Lord of the Rings.
How dare you?
If he starts doing movies, I mean, are these going to be like short films or feature length or sprawling multi-part epics? I mean, what are we in for?
That's a good question. I mean, let's see. Where's the MGS3 movie that Kefka Productions did?
Now, if I remember right, did they actually splice in gameplay?
A little bit, mm-hmm. Yeah. So they got it down to 4 minutes, really 4 hours, though. 20 minutes. 420, blows it.
Yeah, I think they did it better.
I mean, yeah, but it's longer. So Kojima had 3.5 hours to work with.
Yeah, again, these aren't meant to be movies. So to actually see him, the things we joke about, like, oh yeah, Metal Gear's just a movie with gameplay interludes. I mean, like, those are designed to be these drawn-out experiences. But when he is limited to film medium and he has to design something
right
for a two-hour slot,
yeah,
that's going to be very different. I'm actually really interested to see what that's going to be.
I mean, do you think that, you know, his skills were on display in Death Stranding? Or do you have confidence in his abilities as a creator? After playing the game,
I think, like any creator, the best work is done when not in a vacuum.
Okay, all right.
Again, it's as a passion project, I respect it, because this is very clearly the strange, off the wall game that he wanted to make that no one was going to tell him otherwise, and like everyone has one of those kind of things in them where it's just like, this makes sense to me and only me, and I don't care if you don't get it. I get it, and I want to get it out there. And maybe it'll resonate with some people, and maybe it won't, but it really doesn't matter because it mattered to me. Like, everyone's got that one thing, and I think that this was Kojima's one thing. I think.
Hmm.
I don't know. Okay. We won't really... for a while, I'd been saying, like, oh, you know, Kojima's off the leash, and we're really going to know what kind of a creator he is now when this new game comes out, because we're going to see him without any restrictions or oversight. But if right. this was his passion project, if this was the one weird thing, then we might really not know what kind of creator he is until the second project.
So has everyone here played it?
Yep. Played and beat it.
Yep.
I'm the only one who hasn't then. I've only watched all the cutscenes. Which is all I was interested in the game, because I damn sure wasn't going to deliver packages for 60 hours. I just wasn't going to put myself through that. So,
I think it's a lot more fun than people think it might be. But again, it's a chill-out game. It's a chill-out game. Partially a chill-out game.
I also am at a point in my life where I don't want to play any single game for 60 hours. I mean, maybe I'm weird, but...
It's not that long. I mean, I think if you kind of
25 hours would be too much for that. I don't want to spend 10 hours delivering packages. That's just, I mean, you know, maybe it's not the kind of game that I'm interested in, but yeah, I from what I was told, I heard a lot, multiple reports of, you know, at least 40 to 50 hours. You know, the tutorial was something like 20 hours or something. Which
it just depends how, like, how quickly, like, you want to, like, stay, or, like, how much time you want to spend in one area. Like, I'm seeing, like, main story 40 hours, but...
Okay.
But still, it's still a slog if you're not in for that gameplay type. Like, but, you know, I found it as, like, a good way to go from point A to point B. Like, it, you know, it filled in the...
So, one thing I always tell people I like about Kojima, in particular, is that he does a good job of using gameplay to represent some of his themes and messages and the points of his game, essentially. You know, I'm trying to think of a good example of this, but like, for instance, Metal Gear Solid 2, you know, character, people expecting to play Snake, but playing Raiden, and how that's supposed to tie into like disinformation and things like that. For Death Stranding, he kind of goes on the deep end with that, in a sense that he makes the player suffer almost to a point where people quit the game in order to give them sort of the cathartic feeling of when they finally get, you know, into the chiral network and work together with the stranding system. Beyond that, there are a lot of like narrative moments. Well, I don't want to say a lot, a handful of narrative moments in the game where, the gameplay and story dissonance, is very little, but it's to an annoying degree. particularly towards the end, where he's trying to make a point about eternity or a long time, but it ends up turning into like, Kojima, it's fucking 2 a.m. I thought I beat this game like an hour ago.
Okay, before tearing the game to pieces, as it's clear we're about to, what were some of the things that you actually liked about the game?
The funny thing about the game for me is I enjoyed sort of the micro things about it more so than the macro, so to speak. So, like, I enjoyed delivering packages, as crazy as that sounds. I loved sort of building my chiral network and you know, doing strand contracts with people and finding bitching about the bridge to nowhere over by the collector or whatever. Those aspects were awesome to me. On the other hand, the whole like story with Sam and Emil and the United Cities and stuff like that, I couldn't give a shit about that. Like, I wanted to hang out with the collector and the elder and get the elder his weed and yeah. That's my take on Death Stranding.
I relate to that completely. I was saying before, I really like chill out games, and this is kind of in that area to me. One of my favorite games of all time, believe it or not, is SSX3, the snowboarding game.
Oh, I believe it.
And what I love about that game is it's great for unwinding, and this game has a mode in it where you can start at the top of this giant mountain, and every course in the game is a slice of this mountain that you go on. But you can start at the top of the mountain and go all the way to the bottom, choosing your course. You know, if I want to go to this course or if I want to go to this course, and they all weave into each other until you get to the very bottom. And it'll take you about a half hour to go from the top to the bottom, and there's no restrictions or anything, and you can just chill out and take your time and just enjoy it. And that is one of the best gaming experiences to me. And so when a game does something like that, I really enjoy it. And so the whole, you know, yes, you're delivering packages, but just going on a hike around this interesting world, seeing these weird things, figuring out where you're going to go next, and being completely unbound by any sort of linear path is really cathartic to me. I enjoyed that a lot. I actually enjoyed that part. I enjoyed the gameplay far more than I enjoyed the story, which is one of the few times I can say that about a Kojima game.
Wow.
I think it started really strong with the story, too. Like, the world building that was going on, you know, when you're riding in the truck, you know, with Sam and what was it, Igor?
Oh, yeah, that opening is strong.
Like, when that was going on, and yeah.
R.I.P. to a real one.
Yeah. And the intro with him riding the bike, like, it started really strong in the storytelling, and I was like, okay, we're getting these pieces, here we go. But I do think gameplay, another thing that I'll give a lot of credit for is like the progression of those challenges with traversing shit. Because at first it was like, all right, you got these little rocks to deal with on the ground. It's like, okay, that might make me lose my balance a little bit, but, you know, should be good as long as I hold on to my, you know. Then you get the motorcycle, and then you get the trucks, and it, like, eventually you get the zip lines, and that just makes, you know, traveling not even a thing anymore if you have the resources for it.
Until it gets too easy, every single step has to be calculated, and that's a really interesting idea.
Yeah, and the snow, you know, like when that got introduced, and then, you know, then you're like, damn it, I got to deal with this. Then you get the all terrain suit, you know, like they give you like a fix for every problem, pretty much. So
yeah, and that kind of neuters it. You know story feels like? It feels like you've been given a puzzle, but you never find the corner pieces.
Well, I mean, but that's still pretty complete. You can at least have closure with a puzzle like that. Like, oh, it's just missing the corner pieces. To me, it was like, here's a puzzle, and then, like, you put, every time you put two or three pieces together, someone reaches up and punches you in the kidneys. And you're like, damn it, I guess I got to keep going to see how this puzzle turns out, because until you actually put the whole thing together, it's just blank. It's just completely gray cardboard. But then there's a promise. Someone like assures you, there's like a little fairy in your ear, and they're like, hey, listen, if you put this puzzle together, it's going to be like better than crack. Have you ever smoked crack? No? Well, don't worry. You're going to find out when you put this puzzle together. But like a donkey is going to kick you in the nose, you know, as you're putting pieces together. Just, you know, just want to put that out there.
You know,
and you never get the crack.
It's, man, I lost my train of thought.
I think when the puzzle was basically built, the puzzle was like getting there, and then the Amelie scene on the beach happened, and she just went and flipped the table.
I know
over.
What I was going to say. Like,
fuck your puzzle, you know.
This to use the game itself as a metaphor. I feel like I could never catch my footing with regards to this story.
Okay. All right. Yeah. No, it doesn't give you the chance.
I could never get a grip on what it was trying to do or like where I was in the world because it never gave me enough information. And I'm not saying that I'm not saying I want an information dump because when you're given an information dump, what you get is Metal Gear Solid 4.
Right.
I just wanted enough information so that I didn't feel lost in this world.
And did you ever get that?
No.
No.
I mean, can you define what is the Death Stranding?
And we know now, but we couldn't like a couple days ago.
I still don't think we know. I still don't think we know. I think we have a description of things that the Death Stranding caused, but not what it is.
Yeah, we were like, something to do with the baby, and then with the cancer, and the ha, and the ka, and something that upset the balance and caused an explosion, and she got stuck on the beach, and so it just sounds like a rambling homeless person, kind of. Like, it doesn't come together. Where like, I'm like, cool.
Right, it never snaps into focus.
All right, man, well, I'm going to go chill with the elder now, so...
Yeah, I think that's a good place to stop. God.